I'm Bronwyn Williams, futurist and trained analyst, and this is Local Logic, where we help South Africa's technology leaders unlock the real power of data and AI in their technology stack. Join me as I sit down with Dr. Bongani Andy Mbaso, CTO of Altron Group, on building secure data and AI-driven digital transformation. Local Logic, a technology podcast brought to you by Altron, because local expertise drives global results. Welcome to Local Logic, a technology podcast for leaders brought to you by Altron. I'm Bronwyn Williams, your host, and today I'm joined with Dr. Andy Mbaso, Group CTO of Altron, and our special guest, Sharon Pierce, the Chief Solutionist at Fresh Vision Consulting. Today, we're going to be talking about leading through technological change. So let's start with you, Sharon. What do companies most often get wrong when it comes to their people strategy when trying to adopt a technology strategy?
Thanks, Bron. I think the big question for me is less about the people strategy in relation to AI and technology and more about the people strategy in general. Too often we see these generic people strategies and statements around building talent and unlocking potential as opposed to what really matters. I think they are often, frankly, empty and or irrelevant promises and don't really link to the commercial agenda. So I think we need to start to tackle people strategy as a concept in of itself and start to, ditch that word. Actually, I think we should trash it in favor of revenue growth, productivity, and potential enablement, because that is what people strategies should deliver, is the ability to enable growth, to enable productivity, to enable revenue, to enable clients in general, because without the clients, you don't have revenue, and then also our employees. So, you know, if we use digitization as an example, we shouldn't just digitize and AI-fy things from a people strategy perspective. We need to really understand what it is we're trying to drive for the business and whether the technology makes sense in the first place. Digitization isn't a strategy. Experience is the strategy. Delivering what a client needs and the value it needs is the strategy. And on that basis, we start to match the people requirements to the client requirements and, run the risk of digitizing the wrong things otherwise.
Andy, do you want to come in there to talk about what a strategy should really be when it comes to transformation? Where do you start? With the technology, with the people, with both, or with, as Sharon is saying there, with the problem that you're really trying to solve?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Maybe before I answer it, I just want to add to what Sharon said around people. I think it's so spot on, right? I think the fundamentals of business have not changed. And I think when people say we need to adopt new technology, et cetera, often they get caught up in the hype and they forget the fundamentals haven't changed.
Exactly.
You need people to sell to people, right? Like your customers are people, your employees are people, and that's the system that you're trying to solve. So I think often we forget the fundamentals of business and go to the hype. Now, the technology is there as an enabler, 100%. Right? And in this case, let's say I'm talking about a sales staff. How can I use technology to enable my sales staff, right? And it doesn't always have to be a positive answer. Sometimes it's, no, I need to take away technology because it's taking away the human connection and the human element. Sometimes it's, actually, this is very tedious for my sales staff to do. They'd rather not do this and spend more time at their customer place. And therefore, I can enable them in this way. All these vendors are kind of coming at you and going, you must use my solution. You're going to get 10 extra sales and do this and do that. That's not the point. Exactly, right? That's not the point. That's my take as well. From a strategy perspective, again, if you go back to first principles around, you know, the fundamentals of business have not changed. But if I'm trying to transform something, what is the end impact that I'm looking at, right? In terms of increasing customer satisfaction, revenue, retention, customer experience, whatever it is, right? Figure out what it is that I'm trying to achieve and then go backwards to go, okay, what enablers can I then bring in place to help me to achieve that? The challenge with business is we've got all these silos, right? We've got HR, we've got technology, we've got finance, and everybody's doing their own thing, right? But we all forget we're actually all there, to exist, to create something that our customers value.
So everything's got to start with that end in mind, that goal that you're actually trying to achieve, that value that you're trying to deliver. So Sharon, do you want to come in there a little bit with the internal mechanics that we're really talking about here?
I think the reality is that we need to to Andy's point, think about the outcome in mind. We don't digitize for the sake of digitization. Are we trying to empower a client? Are we empowering our staff? And how are we measuring the people around that? And I think people strategies get caught up in the, oh, we're going to go and find the best talent. Well, if you don't really know what the outcome is that we need to achieve, then how is it that you're finding the right talent? So if we're empowering our clients, do we need more service people? If we're doing things well and straight through processing and whatever the tech sort of claims to deliver, do we even need a customer complaints department? So the reality is that we tend to create a whole industry around sort of people practices that go against the value creation element in the first place. And it's not just about cost optimization. It's about getting the balance between efficiency, effectiveness, and experience right. You're here to deliver an experience that a customer can't otherwise get. You know, is the cost worth it to Andy's point? So we should be measuring our HR teams, our people leaders around cost to value and whether we've delivered the end outcome at the end of the day. And we're not. We're measuring activity.
Yeah.
So I see there's a few issues that are kind of emerging there. The first is this erroneous idea that you can separate your tech strategy from your people strategy and have any sort of degree of success to start with. But then there's also kind of the top-down and bottom-up issues when it comes to that intersection of people and technology. So we've spoken a bit about the top-down view, this view that leadership has to have a holistic view of the overall value they're trying to deliver and that your tech and people strategy, that top-down vision, has to be holistic. But then you've also alluded to a little bit the other culture challenge, which is what people generally tend to think about when it comes to people and technological adoption. I know Andy also had a few points there, that you have to get people within the organization to actually embrace that strategy, whatever that strategy is, whether that's a good holistic strategy or a more fragmented, disastrous strategy. Nonetheless, people are still going to have to do it. And there are challenges there, particularly at the moment, with reluctance of people to embrace technological change, because change is hard. And I wanted to find out from both of you where you see that resistance the most. Do we actually find that resistance to actually embrace even the best intended and the most holistic design strategy? Where are we finding that? In leadership, in middle management, with the rank and file employee? Where are we finding those challenges in adopting once you've got that vision set up correctly?
Do you want to give it a go first?
There's no one word answer. You know, NVIDIA right now is the world's most valuable company. I had a chance to go to their annual conference in San Jose earlier this year. And one of the things that struck me about them was how every single employee, at least to me, felt very empowered. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering about that because I met a lady from marketing. She had just joined 2 weeks prior to me meeting her. And we were talking about something and she was like ready to make the decisions right there. I'm like, you just joined. You're not even like the chief marketing officer. You're like, you know, you're like ready to make the decisions. And I was wondering, you know, why is that? There's a podcast and they were talking about NVIDIA around how their hiring philosophy is, how do we make sure that every single employee is totally bought into the vision of the organization, right? And it doesn't matter where you work, whether you are, you know, in finance, whether you are in the R&D division, it doesn't matter, right? Like, what is it that we're trying to achieve as an organization? I think for me, the resistance comes from that. In many organizations, your employees can't even tell you what the vision or the goals of the organizations are. It's unclear. And in fact, I'm just in finance or I'm just in marketing. I'm just there to do what I'm supposed to do just to get through my day. And I really couldn't care less about the rest of the stuff that's happening. So you see that a lot. And so you come up with this new unified strategy and vision and you go, that means you, as a finance person, now need to adopt 1, 2, 3. And they go, I don't even connect to this. I don't even believe in this. Why should I even, you know, adopt something like that? So a lot of it starts from, have you spent the time to really ensure that the team that you've put together across the entire organization really believes in the vision and the purpose of the organization? I don't think many organizations spend enough time doing that, right? Because if you can get people bought in, it's a lot easier to go, okay, I need to adopt this because it's going to help me achieve the mission, or we're going to help the organization achieve its mission in this way.
So there's another sort of point there in terms of the vision. It's not just articulating the vision that everybody in that organization understands what that vision is.
Yeah.
They've also got to understand their role in that vision and own that role within that play.
100%. 100%. I recently trained the entire Altron group leadership team. So that's the entire EXCO on AI. So kind of how to prompt, prompt engineering, context engineering, all of those things. And guess who were the trainers? It was somebody from HR, L&D, or somebody from marketing. It was somebody from departments that you wouldn't consider to be the leaders in that space. And the only reason why they took that upon themselves is because they could connect it to the purpose of the organization. You know, what it is that we're trying to do as Altron. And they embraced that, right? So here's an example of people that you wouldn't typically associate with, you know, someone going to a C-suite and training them on AI and literally just adopting that so quickly and training them. So I thought that was quite powerful and maybe even unexpected because I wasn't trying to, it wasn't my idea. They just kind of said, yeah, can we get involved in this? And I was like, sure, why not? You know, let's just do it. And I was very amazed at how when they connected with the vision and the purpose of this thing, that they could just embrace it themselves. And they've taken it to their own teams as well and trained them as well, right? So they've made my job easier.
Cool. So yeah, just to add to that, I agree on the one hand, but I think what are the things that inhibit organizations and or, you know, create an environment in which that is not possible, I think is the question I'd like to answer on that, which is really about how we design our organizations in the first place. And I think the very reality is that we are caught up in this old sort of view of the world that job descriptions must drive what people do.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest sort of drawback that we have around adoption. You have literally created learned helplessness in organizations by people just, you know, delivering activity and then implementing processes. And I think people would be less resistant if work was designed differently. You know, we've created an environment where people are, you know, reliant on jobs and salaries and therefore reliant on what they do. And technology is associated with you taking that livelihood away.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hold on, we could be doing something different. And the reality is we've created the monster that we live with on an adoption perspective. And HR functions and people strategists need to really shift to that business orientation and think about, well, how are we designing this value chain to deliver the end value? Automation is going to exist forever. It's never going to go away. It has existed forever, but we have always been on the back foot. Every vacancy we just replace. We don't think about, do we need it? Do we need it in this format? Should it be doing something different? What is the outcome attached? That would create a continuous learning environment in which people are not scared of technology, but embrace it rather to be able to do some cool, sexy stuff.
Yeah.
Work doesn't have to be boring.
But Sharon, let's stay with you there because you've started touching, of course, on the big elephant in the technological transformation room, which is what if we're automating the wrong stuff? What if we are entrenching and consolidating processes and people roles and just making them more efficient faster through the technologies we adopt? Maybe you can talk us through, and then maybe Andy, you've got some examples of either success or failure that you've seen. So starting with you, Sharon, can you articulate that problem with, as you've termed it, regretty spaghetti and how to untangle that mess? And then Andy, can you come in with some pearls of wisdom as to how to avoid automating inefficiencies within organizations?
So maybe, Bron and Andy, if I can start with just reading out the my definition of regretty spaghetti, because I think that's quite important. But really, we define it as the regretful mess of wasteful, expensive investments in an ultimately redundant patchwork of MVPs, minimal viable products, and tech, with poor integration coupled with process-led versus experience-led service design, that is supported then by org designs and structures that perpetuate BS jobs rather than value creation and end up slowing us down at the end of the day. And we see this all too often. I think there's so many proponents talking about AI that say you need to optimize your workflows and redesign your processes. And, you know, the techies who've worked with me who might see this will be frustrated. We've had many fights when I get told I must start with process. It's in the same way as starting with activity and tasks in what everyone is saying is the next wave of HR strategy, skills-based organizations. It's dangerous. we have to look at the outcome and experience we're trying to create, and through that define what we therefore automate as opposed to automating bad processes. One of the biggest technologies and breakthroughs everyone thinks we have is that we can automate the recruitment process, and in particular screening. You send a CV in. By the way, CV passing technologies really do what they say they're going to do, and it spits out 10 candidates that fit the brief. The reality is that that brief has been programmed into the machine badly. In other words, it's saying, have you got a qualification X, Y, and Z? I can say yes. You've got no way of knowing whether I do or don't.
Yeah.
Yes, no questions are bad in the first place. You know, the reality is that should we be putting technology on top of a screening process for thousands and thousands of CVs? Or should we be attracting the 10 people based on the communication and how we've really sort of gone into our sourcing strategy to find the 10 best people in the world around something? Because that cuts out way more energy, right?
Yeah.
Then I don't have to go through 50,000 CVs. I don't, not to mention how badly designed our systems are that have unique identifiers, for example, as email addresses. I have 3 email addresses. If I'm with client 4, 5, 6, I can register my same CV 40 times. You're literally processing the same BS CV 40 million times. And so starting with process is really dangerous because we end up using the wrong identifiers, the wrong business processes, the wrong rules. We need to elevate that up a bit and say, what is it we're trying to achieve here? Well, I want the 5 best candidates that exist in the world. Great. Well, how could we hope to achieve that? What jobs do we even want to auto screen and which should we not? What's going to require a different strategy? So we have to elevate our thinking beyond process and think about outcome and experience. Otherwise, you are going to have to untangle a mess that has created you screening the same person 40 times, possibly in 40 different siloed departments of recruitment in which one person regretted me, the other person said yes. On top of that, you've created a terrible experience because you said no, you said yes, left hand doesn't know what right hand's doing. Just stop and think.
This might sound controversial. I think the AI hype has led people to putting their minds on blank. And assuming that things will just automagically get done. There's no such thing as things will get automagically, you know, get done. I have a serious problem with people, and I know what they're trying to say when people go, AI will replace people. I think that's the wrong premise. Like, I think it's kind of missing the point, right? And it's kind of going along with the hype. I do not think that you can replace the level of skill, intent, the level of nuance that's required, right? In say, for example, hiring the right person, in just automating it away by averaging it across, you know, multiple or several hundred or thousands of data sets. The magic is gone, right? You know, the magic comes from, I have spent time working with people, you know, like, you know, in this role. I know what to look for. You know, that's valuable for me, as a leader, for me as part of this organization, where we are in the organization, the customers that we're serving, et cetera. There's so much nuance, that I think is not really captured, right? When you try and automate some of these things away. So I could not agree more. I like to say, and I just want to use AI as an example, that AI is there to empower people, but it's not there to replace people, because, you know, it just depends on your departure point. If your departure point is about replacing people, then sure, automate all the screening away. It's as clever. It's as intelligent. Why not do that? Right. But if it's about how can I accelerate my, you know, what I do, to achieve more, but without taking away the responsibility, then I think we're talking at a very different, you know, sort of level. If I move away from the HR example, you could apply it exactly the same way. Every other era, the responsibility and the genius of who you are and your experiences, that is what counts. General processing units or graphics processing units are accelerants. They are there to accelerate, you know, productivity now and intelligence. That's not a replacement. So the right thing to go to ask is, one, do I need to redesign my processes and make it better for my customer? And by the way, that is true whether or not there is AI or there's new technology or not. You should always be trying to do that. And then number two, is there something that can accelerate me in doing that or that can enable me to do that a lot better? That's when you can bring in technology. And I think often we do it the other way around. Let's go back to first principles. Solve problems. What is the outcome you're looking for? Solve the problem. If it requires tech, sure, your business case writes itself. If it doesn't require tech, then don't use it. Yeah.
I think maybe just to add, Annie, I think the biggest issue for me is that we aren't designing our organizations in the right way. So we're designing the checking process or the screening process.
Yes.
We're not designing for the outcome of right talent, right role, right place, right time.
Yes.
Right whatever. The point is, you should not be hiring people to do non-value adding work. And that stuff can be automated.
Yeah.
It will be automated away. But the reality is, we should never have hired people to do those things anyway.
I forget the person that said this. I can't attribute the quote appropriately. But it's something like, organizations are inherently inefficient.
Yes.
And we've overdone things. And all this AI hype is about, it's almost like we all know inherently that we've built in an inefficiency, right? And it's exposing that in a way. But with or without the technology, that inefficiency was there.
Exactly.
Now, look, there's very few organizations that are, you know, as Sharon says, rightly designed.
Yeah.
You know, from a scaling perspective, et cetera.
Absolutely. I want to come back to this. We've really been speaking today about, you've got to have this obsession about what's the end result, what's the value delivering, how do you actually get to that goal, that first principle you talk about there, Andy. Dr. Vivian Ming recently put out a comment that I wanted to run by you here because I think it's really related to this conversation of the intersection of technology and people within organizations. And she's been speaking quite a lot about how when people start to apply automated technologies, sure, you can use them, as you said, to accelerate the goal you were doing anyway, or even to augment, to improve our thinking, to connect dots that we wouldn't be able to do with our fallible human minds and augmentation, fair enough. But there's this other piece that sometimes when we adopt technologies, they actually end up sort of atrophying our brain, right? Because we stop thinking for ourselves. Yeah. And I know this is something Sharon has written about too. That's like, when we use technology, we mustn't stop thinking. We must rather stop to think. But do you have any advice there, especially squaring that circle with the other comments you've been making about a lot of us are doing things that shouldn't be done anyway.
Right.
But what are your thoughts around atrophy versus augmentation when it comes to really leadership, but also ownership of our own roles within any value-based ecosystem?
We're talking about, you know, our own intelligence, our skill, our capability to do something, etc. And whether us outsourcing that to some other tool, like an AI tool, a chatbot, is causing us to lose that capability over a period of time. Look, I think it's a very interesting one. And it goes back to the issue of ownership. If you are owning the outcome and you're going, I am responsible for this and this is what I need to get done, then I think you know, the level of atrophy you'll experience is a lot less. What is happening though, and we see it practically at work, and I've got real examples where people literally put their mind on blank, outsource the entire work to some chatbot and then present that as their work. I mean, surely over a period of time, I'm going to be, you know, you can't be getting any better. There's no critical thinking that you're applying. You're not bringing your wealth of experience. You're not talking to other people. You're just regurgitating or at least copying something that, you know, something else or someone else is actually saying. So I do think there's a real danger in that, you know, when people outsource their thinking. The way I like to use these tools is I like to think of myself as the master. And I define the outcomes. I drive the path towards getting there. Every now and then, I need an acceleration because it's repetitive now. Like, I've done this step 10 times over. That's a really great example for where you should automate, because you absolutely understand what you're doing and you just want to make sure that you can do it faster. You're not losing that skill. You're simply increasing your productivity. So it's hard to measure exactly like how much is happening, but from my personal experience, it's happening a lot more than people think in organizations. In Altron, there's something like 90% adoption of personal AI tools. We actually did a scan within our network from a security perspective, of course, to see which tools are being used, and we found over 120 tools. Most of them, obviously, you know, we don't even have a license for, right? People are just adopting these things. So it's happening anyway. And I think as leaders, we need to be just aware that it is happening. And how do we then guide our organizations to go, guys, you are still, I'm employing you. I'm not employing ChatGPT. the outcomes you are responsible for, right? You need to make sure that the quality of work is up to scratch.
And I think interestingly there, maybe Sharon, you can pick up, is that you've been speaking and we've been speaking on the individual level. Like, yes. Am I as an individual owning my outcome? Am I applying my mind? Am I using tools like Iron Man to make me bigger, faster, stronger, smarter? Or am I sort of outsourcing myself and therefore diminishing my value?
Right.
But what are your thoughts, Sharon, of this on an organizational scale, organizational atrophy of organizational augmentation when it comes to smart or less smart transformational strategy?
So I think at an organizational level, we've spoken about it a lot. I think we've been atrophying over time with or without the tech.
Yeah.
In the sense that I say that agnostic of AI and the accelerators of mediocrity that are likely to come, you know, as a result. The reality is that there are inherent problems. I think, Bron, you refer to organizational cholesterol, which sits outside of just work design and structures, but inherently in culture and behavior. And it goes back to, again, what we value and what we measure. And I think what we say to clients versus the costs that they actually bear, if we were very transparent about the fact that actually in order for you to have gotten your bank account or whatever, your piece of tech, someone had to check somebody's code, had to do something, that whether it's ChatGPT or whatever is irrelevant. The point is that, you know, if we had programmed things slightly differently in a decision in a different way or had different markers for how we would measure value, we wouldn't as an organization be at such a risk of competition and whatever else. Yeah. That comes with it. And so I think that the problem with atrophy lies in behavior, in people, in structure, in collectively how we make decisions, how we, you know, define what goes into the business strategy, what we approve in a budget. All of that stuff, if you really think about it, has nuance that if we're not careful from an organizational perspective, we will automate and create an even bigger problem than we already inherently have. And your people know what it is. They will tell you it takes 40 years to get an approval, or, you know, we have to go through a procurement process. We, you know, on a client, there's vendors you're trying to hire. It's taken 6 months, the whole year. You've lost productivity. You've lost the ability to do anything. And that's where I think AI can't help you.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, let's sum this all up because we've covered a lot of ground in this conversation. If a client comes to you from a large organization and they want to do a dramatic transformation, embracing technology to move forward, what are some of the questions that you would encourage them to answer and figure out either alongside you or by themselves before they actually start?
My number one question that I always like to add is, does this make your beer taste better? And if it does, how? So if you can't define that for me in whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, it's hard for me to, you know, to kind of have a conversation with you. I actually literally do this, right? We had a large media customer about 18 months ago approach us, you know, very kind of similar vein. Hey, help me do 1, 2, 3. And they were ready to kind of give us the big bucks. And it's very easy to go, okay, let's just sign you up. I've met my targets. You know, it's great. I'm going to get my bonus. But we actually said, guys, well, can we just spend 3 months with you just to understand what it is that you're trying to achieve? In fact, we'll do it for free. We'll do it for free because we see that there could be value, but we're not sure, right? Because you can easily diminish value, especially as a technology provider, by trying to rush in and be the hero, right? And you don't spend enough time ensuring that your customer understands what it is that they are trying to do. And I'm not saying that because customers are not intelligent, or it's got nothing to do with that. It's as a result of the system that we've been talking about, right? The organizational atrophy that Sharon has been mentioning, that sometimes the brief, by the time it comes to you, it's lost its purpose and meaning, right? So you don't know what you're trying to deliver, right? So how can I deliver well if you're not even sure what it is that you're looking for, right? So for me, that's the fundamental question. What are the outcomes you're trying to achieve? How does it make you deliver better value to your customers, increase your revenues, increase efficiency? I want to be very, very clear how it makes your beer taste better. Once we are clear on that, then we can start to work backwards around, okay, we now are very clear about the outcomes. This is how we think we can come in and be able to assist you. So it's not a simple process. I think that's the solutioning, perhaps, you know, Sharon, that you were speaking about earlier. And the art of that is kind of lost a little bit,
yeah.
Because so much stuff is just repeat, right? Like I read an article and, you know, I kind of buy into whatever it says and then I read it. You forget. It's got a context. It's maybe written in an American environment. You know, it's a different organization, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that you read is just a use case. It's just an example of how someone has done something, but it doesn't mean you can just take that and copycat it into your own environment.
Exactly.
You still have to apply your mind around what is my specific context? Who are my customers? Where am I? What is the economic situation, et cetera, and then be able to define those outcomes appropriately.
And Sharon, do you have anything to add there in terms of becoming that solutionist in for today?
No, I think the reality is that diagnosticians is what we all need to be, and we need data to do that and do it well.
Yeah.
And just going for, you know, we write about shinyitis, going for the next new big wave of skills-based organization, new tech, AI, whatever, is not really the answer.
Yeah.
Unless you're able to diagnose exactly what problems you're solving for, opportunities you're hoping to capture, don't waste your time plugging technology on top of it. Do it with the right, for the right reasons. Know what questions to ask and what to do with the answers. The art of asking questions and knowing what to do with the answers is lost.
Yeah.
And that's where solutionist thinking is so, so, so important. Everyone should be taught to do that, not just follow a process or a policy or a tick box. That's our fault if that's happening.
And on that note, thank you, Andy, Sharon, for joining us on Local Logic, a technology podcast for leaders brought to you by Altron. Local Logic, a technology podcast brought to you by Altron, because local expertise drives global results.